Austin Hedges. And Hedges hits a ground ball into right field, and Merrifield thought about throwing to first. So Austin Hedges, whose career batting average is under 200 in over 400 major league games, is the first Indians hitter to get a base hit, and it comes with two outs in the bottom of the eighth.
Ball at the Texan 27. They zone block it to the right, cut back left, run. It goes to Edwards-Helaire, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City, CEH with TD1. What a night for the rookie, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. A great cutback run.
Rookie is the story of the night. If you're a Royals and Chiefs fan, there was a lot of stuff going on last night. Rookie right-hander Brady Singer lost a no-hitter with two outs in the eighth inning in just his eighth career start, I believe. That's not bad. His ninth career start. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which a lot of people have been high on him, and I thought when they drafted him, he's a perfect fit for this offense. And, man, did he look good last night for the Chiefs. He had his first rushing touchdown as a Chief last night. As the Chiefs rolled the Texans 34-20, game wasn't that close. A couple late touchdowns by the Texans, which Tyrann Mathieu is not very happy about. Which, you know what? I love to see that. That means that you're not satisfied. You're hungry. You want your defense to be the best in the league. And if you have a chance to hold a team to 7 points and give up, you know, 13 late, even though you won by 14, don't be happy. Don't be satisfied. I like that. I like Tyrann Mathieu being upset about that. That's called pride.
Absolutely.
I love it. I love it. So we're going to talk Chiefs. We'll talk Royals with Brady Singer's performance. We'll hear from Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. We'll break down the Chiefs' win last night. And also the NBA, a star disappearing. We'll explain that. In college football this weekend, KU and K-State will play tomorrow. At least we believe they will. They're planning on playing 11 a.m. tomorrow for K-State and KU late tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. But first, we go to our local sports edition of the Sports Ticket and local scores from last night.
Yeah, TMP and Beloit played volleyball last night over in Beloit varsity match. TMP ended up winning the best of five match in four sets. Beloit won the first set 26-24, and then TMP won the next three, 25-20, 25-12, 25-14. So TMP Marion getting that victory last night there in Beloit and varsity volleyball action. Also cross country yesterday, Beloit at Heston, as they run those races by class. So in the freshman boys race, Lance Lundeen finished in second place for Beloit. In the senior boys race, Jacob Porter was 11th. Sophomore girls race, Ariana Armstrong finished in sixth place, and Jenna Balutz was eighth place. You can find the Beloit results at ncksports.com, as well as results from the Stockton Invitational cross country meet yesterday, as the Osborne girls and boys both finished third place as a team. Reagan Bales of Osborne was the individual champion, as he had a time of 17:55.15 in the boys' race. And then Jonah Hill was seventh from Sylvan Lucas. Graham Bales of Osborne finished in eighth. And then in the girls' race, Gracie Enix of Smith Center, a top 10 finish at seventh place. Again, the full results from that Stockton Invitational are at ncksports.com. So there's your action from yesterday in the area.
All right, we turn our attention now to high school football. Let's go through the schedule, and then we will hear from some of the coaches.
Yes, immediate area schedule here for week two of the high school football season. Katy Country 94 tonight. We'll have Rock Hills at Lakeside. And then on Z96.3 The Lake, it's St. John's Tipton hosting Osborne as 8-man Division II District 4 play gets underway. Also in that district, games that are going on tonight in the immediate area, it's Pike Valley at Thunder Ridge there in District 4. Also, Nate Man District 5, Sylvan Lucas in Division 2, Sylvan Lucas at Otis Bison. Lincoln has a non-district game against Fairfield. And back to the NCAA, the Beloit Trojans traveling to Rural Gypsum to face Southeast of Saline this evening on ncksports.com, the Beloit Trojan channel. And then also Smith Center is hosting Phillipsburg tonight in the Mid-Continent League and Concordia at Abilene in the NCKL. And those are the games in the immediate area here this evening for week two of the high school football season.
All right, our broadcast schedule for tonight, Football Express at 5:40. We'll preview all the matchups, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. Pregame at 6:30, and then kickoff at 7 o'clock. We have three games for you. We'll begin with our games on the radio tonight. It'll be Rock Hills at Lakeside on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. Get that free app on your smartphones, Katy Country 94, free app. John Bowden will have the call from Downs as Lakeside. Tough loss in week one to Logan Palco. Rock Hills a convincing win in week one over Wichita Homeschool. Drew Dusky, head coach of the Lakeside Knights, ready for another physical game tonight against the Grizzlies at home.
they've got experience kind of like we do, and they're going to be bigger than we are, and they're going to be physical. And, you know, I think it's going to be a kind of a lot like the game against Logan where, you know, if you play well enough and do the things you're supposed to, it's going to be a four quarters of kind of grinded out football, and it's going to take four quarters to figure out who the winner is, and that's kind of what I'm expecting and hoping for.
Colby Hamlin is second year head coach of Rock Hills. He's well aware that Lakeside has experienced a quarterback in Kylan Cunningham.
Just him having athleticism. It's an eight-man football, man. When you got a guy that you're snapping the football to that can make plays, you know, and that experience as well, you know, kids tend to learn a little bit more each year. They learn how to read coverages or defenses the other teams are running. And, you know, you got a slick quarterback over there. I told my guys, you better get two or three bodies on him because he might break a tackle. And, you know, when he gets to the edge, sometimes you only got one or two defenders out there, so you got to make plays.
Rock Hills, the convincing win last week, but really wasn't tested or pushed. Lakeside with the loss, but they did get pushed. We'll be interested to see if that helps Lakeside in tonight's game, as it is Lakeside hosting Rock Hills tonight on Katy Country 94 and KatyCountry94.com. Over on Z96.3 Lake, Dusty and Todd will be in Beloit. It'll be Osborne at St. John's Tipton. Both teams coming off of losses in week one. Dean Gingler's team losing to Sylvan Lucas last week 38-31. They turn their attention to the Bulldogs in Osborne. Despite losing week one, Coach Gingler says they're still a really good team.
They've just had tremendous success over the years. So regardless of whether the kids directly have the experience on the field, they've got the attitude of that experience. So I think that follows through. That makes, you know, some of their younger kids, I think, a good deal more experienced when it comes to really football and how you handle it, because they've done well and they've experienced success, so they expect it.
The Osborne defense allowed 45 points last week, and St. John's Tipton's offense put up 31 on Sylvan Lucas. Steve Turner, head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs, well aware of what the offense of the Blue Jays can do.
They probably make you cover the whole field. I mean, that the quarterback's got a good arm. He can throw it 40, 50 yards down the field, and they've got speed that can stretch the field on you. And then they've got size as well, so, I mean, they could run the ball right at you if they chose to do that. So we're definitely going to have to defend the whole field and just pay attention to what we're supposed to be doing.
Osborne and St. John's Tipton tonight on Z96.3 Lake. Online, katycountry94.com. Get the free Z96.3 Lake app on your smartphones. We'll talk more about those two games later tonight on the Express with a complete preview of them starting at 5:40, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. So those are the games on the radio tonight, two NPL matchups. A battle of the Trojans, the North Central Tech Association tonight on our live video stream at nckisports.com via Beloit Trojan Channel. As Beloit, 0-1, a loss to Republic County last week, 30-14, showing some of their youth and inexperience last week. They'll take on a very experienced team, Southeast Saline, ranked 5th in Class 3A. Southeast went up to 3A, Beloit dropped to 2A, and really, it's almost like Southeast and Beloit just swapped schedules from last year. Beloit's basically playing some of the teams Southeast did in their district. Southeast now has got to play Colby and Goodland and the teams that Beloit had to play. Southeast has 8 starters back on offense, 9 on defense. They have size on the line. They've got some speed. They've got the height. They've got an experienced quarterback. And Brad Gober, head coach of the Beloit Trojans, knows Southeast Saline is very experienced.
They had a smaller senior class last year. They had some good players in their senior class still last year. But, you know, a big chunk of their players were you know, the juniors last year from, obviously, his son, the quarterback, and some of their linemen. That's the Harp kid, you know, the Harris and Banks kid, the linebacker, outside linebackers, and then the Rodriguez and at the inside. So the big thing is when you look at their roster, it's like pretty much where it's like a spitting image. It's kind of deja vu, like when my coaches said this weekend, we're playing the same exact team we played last year. They're just a year older now.
Southeast Saline's won 4 of the last 5 innings against Beloit on the gridiron. Last time Beloit beat Southeast Saline was back in 17 when they had to play on a Saturday when they got rained out the day before. And then the next year, 2018, at Southeast, it was rainy, a little bit foggy. Field was a little slippery for both teams. And Beloit lost by 1, went for a 2-point conversion and did not convert with 36 seconds to go. Then last year, 2019, the game was tied with 48 seconds to go, but Southeast Saline had an interception returned down to the 1. Bryant Banks ran it in. That made it 20-12 with a 2-point conversion. Beloit then would drive with 48 seconds left all the way down to about the 25, and the last-second pass for the end zone was picked off at the goal line by Jackson Gebhardt. So the last 2 years, Southeast Saline and Beloit, the game could have gone either way, but Southeast got the win in the final seconds. We'll see if it comes down to the wire tonight. Beloit is a significant underdog tonight. Southeast Saline hosting Beloit live video stream, ncksports.com, via the Beloit Trojan channel. That'll begin at 6:45. Dusty went through the whole schedule for you earlier of the games tonight. We'll preview all of them tonight on the Express at 5:40. And the schedule, the complete schedule, is there along with our broadcast schedule at ncksports.com. Anything you want to add for week two going into tonight?
Not a lot. Like I say, we'll preview everything tonight. Just kind of looking forward to seeing all the improvements that the teams have made between week one and week two and moving on and you know, district play starting right here in week two tonight. So for those eight-man teams that we mentioned, so you got to be ready to go and get moving here tonight, especially in that district four that I was talking about with the four teams that are in the two games that we have on our radio stations. It's a very tough district, and it's very important to get off on the right foot when you're evenly matched, you feel like, with maybe three, four, five teams in that district. So that's the feature tonight is getting off on the right foot.
We got some sports for tomorrow. I'll just to go through the schedule here, but I can tell you that the Beloit volleyball team will be at the Southeast of Saline volleyball tournament tomorrow. They'll play Circle at 9 a.m., and then around 10, they'll play Concordia, and around 11, Smoky Valley. It's a rolling schedule, and it's different this year because of COVID-19. It's not a full-fledged tournament. Normally, you'd have two pools of four. You'd play three matches, and then you would cross-bracket, you know, the top teams from each pool and eventually have semis and finals. That's not what's going to happen. Keisha has recommendations. Southeast Saline Tournament in Gypsum is going to follow those recommendations. Other places in the state are ignoring those recommendations and going and playing it all out. So Beloit will play three matches tomorrow, and that's as simple as that. They'll play Circle, Concordia, and Smoky Valley at Southeast Saline. We're going to try to do live video stream with the volleyball matches tomorrow. I say try because Southeast Saline in that gymnasium is a nightmare. It's a good gym, great gym, but connectivity in there is always a problem. I've been told that things have improved. We shall see. We're going to give it a whirl. So if you try to tune in a video stream tomorrow and it's not on, or it might just mean keep checking back. Maybe we're having problems. Maybe things are running behind schedule-wise. Or maybe we just can't get connected because of what's going on there at Southeast Gym. So it's always a bit of a hole in the ground, and it is kind of a gem in the ground. And then in the middle of rural America, and the connectivity there is not that great. So Beloit will have three matches tomorrow, the Lady Trojans at the Southeast Saline Volleyball Tournament. Also, there is other volleyball going on, and I believe some tennis and maybe even cross-country?
Yeah, Sylvan Lucas Tournament for volleyball at 8 o'clock tomorrow. Sylvan Lucas, Lakeside, and Lincoln are competing there. Osborne will be at the Trigo Tournament. That starts at 8:30 in Waukene tomorrow morning. And then Rock Hills at the Solomon Tournament starting at 9 o'clock. Osborne Girls Tennis at the Russell Tournament starts at 9 o'clock. And, yes, there's Pike Valley Cross Country will be at the Wamego Invitational starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow. So that's a look at the local sports for the weekend.
Very good. Best of luck to all of our area athletes and teams tonight and into the weekend. This just in, the Chiefs played a varsity football game last night. Clover listening. Clover thought the JV was playing last night. He didn't even know it was a season opener for football. He's like, dude, there's no preseason this year. But, yeah, so Todd, pretty good sports fan, but apparently not too worried about his Dolphins if he's not even paying attention to the start of the season. A lot of people in this country are big football fans, had this date circled for a very long time, September the 10th. Last night, the NFL began their season. The defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs against the Houston Texans, a rematch of the divisional round of the playoffs a year ago, where the Chiefs are down 24-0. And then outscored them 51-7 the rest of the way. And it really looked like a similar situation. Chiefs got down 7-0, scored 31 unanswered, and they got the scoring started with the normal combination of Mahomes to Kelsey.
Kelsey in motion again, right to left. Four-man rush. Mahomes fires for the end zone. Caught! Kelsey! Touchdown! Kansas City shielding his shoulder just inside the linebacker, and the Chiefs cap off a spectacular drive.
That tied the game at 7, and then the Chiefs would get the ball back after the defense got a stop. 16-play, 91-yard drive, the longest drive in Patrick Mahomes' young history as quarterback in the National Football League, and he capped it off with a short touchdown pass to Sammy Watkins.
Chiefs now shift to three wide to the right. In motion, Watkins. They throw a quick screen. Watson with the catch. Leaps forward. Touchdown! Kansas City! They motioned to Trips and then brought Watkins back and threw him a quick screen. The sausage blew up the guy in front of him, and the Chiefs complete a brilliant 16-play, 91-yard drive.
I put the Chiefs up 14-7. They'd make it 17-7 on a field goal. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire found the end zone for the first time as a Kansas City Chief.
Ball at the Texan 27. They zone block it to the right. Cut back left, run. It goes to Edwards-Helaire. 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Kansas City, CEH with TD 1. What a night for the rookie Clyde Edwards-Helaire. A great cutback run.
Yeah, he broke a tackle, then a great cutback. That looked like some of his runs at LSU, and that's why I envisioned him doing it in a Chiefs uniform. That was pretty impressive. We'll talk more about him and his night, the rookie first-round draft pick out of LSU. That made it 24-7, and then the Chiefs just piled on a little bit more later on in the ballgame. Mahomes getting Tyreek Hill involved as only Mahomes could. He rolled right and threw a dart on the money to Tyreek Hill.
Third down, goal to go at the two for Mahomes. Sprinting to the right side, fires Tyreek Hill. He's got it. Touchdown, Kansas City. The third touchdown pass of the night for Patrick Mahomes, and the Chiefs convert on third and goal from the two.
Chiefs win the ballgame 34-20. Who needs preseason? You know, it's interesting. I thought going into the game last night there'd be a little bit of rust, but I thought the product might be better than some people expect. Now, the Texans certainly struggled more than the Chiefs. The Chiefs don't have as many new faces and new places as the Texans do. So maybe I think the Chiefs are a team that really didn't need preseason. They proved that last night. I think that most NFL teams could use some preseason. But teams that have the same coaching staff back and have most of the same players, the main players, preseason is really overrated. I mean, you need training camp. You got that. But I'm talking playing preseason games. You know, it didn't look like it was that big a deal. Injuries, yeah, there are a few for the Chiefs. Okafor left with an injury. Charvarius Ward with a hand injury. Kalen Saunders left with an elbow injury. We'll get more reports on that because now they have an extra few days to repair before week two when they go to L.A. to take on the Chargers in that state-of-the-art brand-new football stadium. But the Chiefs looked like a team that didn't need preseason at all and were sharp and dominated the game. After the Texans scored that touchdown, the Chiefs dominated the game. Remember, they had a touchdown to start the game, and it was negated because Robinson couldn't hold on to it, although that was a great defensive play by the corner. I think it was Reed for the Texans, and then the Chiefs ended up punting after taking a sack. So the Chiefs get the job done. 34-20 game really wasn't even that close. And Patrick Mahomes, early on, maybe took him a little bit of time to figure out what the Texans are doing on defense. Mahomes talked about those different looks from the new Texans D with a new defensive coordinator.
They did. They changed it up a lot. They did a lot of stuff at the line of scrimmage, and then they kind of stayed back and kept safeties back, and they put a guy over 10 pretty much the whole entire game. And so I think that's what makes this offense so good is we can change within games. We can go throughout our game plan and find ways to score and find ways to move the ball down the field. And today it was running the football and taking the short passes. And I think whenever we get to the Chargers next week, we'll have playing another great defense, and we'll have to find a way to move the ball and score that week as well.
Patrick Mahomes on facing a different type of Houston Texan defense. All right, I told you we would do this. I'm a little bit behind, and I apologize. The final moment observation of silence here in recognition of Patriot Day, of course, 19 years ago, 9/11, horrible day in our country. We've gone through every one of these, the four planes that crashed. The South Tower collapsed. We've done a moment silence for all five of those events. And now the final one here, World Trade Center North Tower collapsed at 9:28 Central Time, 19 years ago today. Let's pause for a moment. Silence in observance of 9/11. Once again, today is Patriot Day. Never forget. So the Chiefs win last night by a final 34-20. Certainly a lot of the talk after what took place last night for the Chiefs was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was fantastic last night. He rushed for 138 yards and a touchdown on 25 carries. And when there are six or less defenders in the box, he ran for 96 yards on 10 carries. His average was 3.2 when there are seven or more defenders. Well, let's think about this for a second. The Chiefs, if there are six men in the box, now they've got a back that can break tackles and is pretty electric. Damian Williams is a good running back. He is. Helaire is just maybe at a different level. I think we saw that last night. And so if they're going to put six in the box, this is why the Chiefs got rich. The rich got richer. This is what people feared when the Chiefs grabbed Clyde Edwards-Helaire, a running back, the first running back taken, final pick of the first round, right away people are like, oh boy. And you could see why Patrick Mahomes said, Clyde. When they asked him, who should we draft? He's like, dude, Clyde. and they got Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I saw him at LSU, and I was thoroughly impressed with the guy. And I thought, wow, this is a perfect fit for the Chiefs' offense. If he works hard and learns how to pass protect, he's a perfect fit for this Chiefs' offense. You know, the Chiefs had Kareem Hunt, and we know the offense clicked pretty good with Kareem Hunt in Mahomes' first year as a starter, right? And then, of course, everything yes. changed with Hunt, and he was let go. And now you've got Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it's pretty simple. The last couple of years, you could – here are the flaws with the Chiefs. One, the defense. You just run the ball, keep the ball out of Mahomes' hands, and you limit time of possession. And that still, most of the time, didn't work, even against a horrible Chiefs defense. The other way was to go ahead and drop a lot of guys in coverage and disrespect the Chiefs' running game, that you could go ahead with six men in the box and you could still slow down the Chiefs' running game, or Andy Reid just would go away from it. Now what do you do? Because last night, it was very clear. I mean, if you're the Chiefs and you're looking at Patrick Mahomes and there's six men in the box, you very well could just audible to a run. And if there are seven or more in the box, you stick with your pass play or you audible to a pass play. It sounds kind of simple, but the numbers don't lie last night. And one of the things Chris Collinsworth pointed out on the broadcast last night, and I thought he was right about this, was that the Chiefs' offensive line was more physical. And Osimile does bring a physical presence. And I've tried to say this for a while. Darvarney Tardif, who opted out, and by the way, I commend him to the hilt by him stepping away from football, stepping away for millions of dollars to help people as a doctor in Canada and fight COVID-19. I applaud him. To me, he is a medical hero, okay? Now, from a football standpoint, I didn't think he played great last year. And from a football standpoint, I thought in regards to a cap situation after this year, he probably would have been a cap casualty anyway. And now he opts out by his own volition, and the Chiefs go find Osimile. Osimile is bigger, more physical, and is better as a run blocker than Tardif is. Now, you may say, what's the deal here? If you really know Chiefs football, Tardif was the right guard, and Osimile played left guard last night. Well, here's the difference. Wiley was your starting left guard last year, Andrew Wiley. All right, and Tardif was your right guard. When Tardif opted out, Wiley moved to right guard, and that's where he was last night, and Osimile went in the left guard spot. So Wiley moves to Tardif's spot, and in the Wiley spot at left guard is Osimile. So the Chiefs got stronger, is what I'm trying to say, as offensive line. And I felt that way going into the game last night. I felt that way for about the last year or so, that Tardif is a good lineman, but I think he's replaceable, is all I'm trying to say. And I think the Chiefs proved last night he was replaceable. And in fact, I think they're more physical and will be perhaps better off in the long run. You know, Osimile did stand out in his run blocking last night. There is no doubt about that. And so one of the benefactors of that great run blocking was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And here's CEH, if you don't want to say all the way out, CEH, talking about his first game as a pro.
Completely epic. You know, still have pretty much have butterflies, still kind of shaking from it. Ultimately, I was just in a place that I felt like I needed to be. I felt like home on the field, Chiefs Kingdom. Everything just felt natural. So I'm just excited. I'm happy to continue this run that we have going. You know, this league is about wins. So one win under our belt.
Keep this in mind about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because my son was telling me last night, he's 14, and sometimes we disagree on things. Sometimes he's right. Sometimes I'm right. And he goes, I don't think Helaire, he goes, I think Helaire is overhyped a little bit. I don't think he's going to be as good as people think. I said, I disagree. This is at the beginning of the game. I said, I think he's going to have at least 800 yards rushing and 500 yards receiving. That was my numbers I threw out at him. I think he could run for 1,000, clearly. But I said 800 rushing and 500 receiving. One thing we did not see much of last night, they tried to throw it to him a little bit. But just wait till they throw the ball on some screens to him in the open field. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that last night. Didn't have to.
No,
they had a tight. By the way, that play design where they faked the screen going left the Helaire and there was a tight end screen over the middle and all the misdirection is a brilliant play design.
Yeah.
That was an added wrinkle on top of a play they ran a lot last year. Mm-hmm. You know, Andy Reid talked in the offseason, we're working on different wrinkles. That was one that they brought out in the season opener. That's fun to watch. I don't know what you do defensively against the Chiefs. If the Chiefs stay healthy, what do you do? Because I was talking with my oldest son about this last night. Who do you key on? Like, now you got a guy that can run the ball and can break some tackles. So if you crowd the box, you're going to get killed down the field with one-on-one coverage against Watkins, against Hill, and against Kelsey, and against Hardman. And then Robinson's not a bad receiver either, by the way. And Pringle probably play a lot more if he's on a different team, because I think Pringle's not a bad receiver at all from Kansas State. And they didn't really get Hilaire involved in any kind of screen game or swing pass game yesterday. Darrell Williams ran fine when he had an opportunity. I mean, who do you key on? So if you want to crowd the box, you're gonna have to leave somebody single covered. And if you play a zone, Mahomes is smart enough to just take what the defense gives you. Already at the age of 24, he's like, fine, I'll take my 10-yard first down. I'll check it down to Kelsey or my running back. So you got to decide, who do you take away? I don't know, because when they're all healthy, I don't know who you take away. Hill stretches the field. That opens things up for Kelsey. Watkins can stretch the field, but he's more of a possession receiver in this offense. Hardman can stretch the field. So you stretch the field with Hardman and Hill down the field deep, whether you're zone or man-to-man, you open up things, and safeties have to make some really tough decisions. That throw to Robinson for the first touchdown that was negated because the ball was knocked away on the review was a perfect example. Is the safety had to go, he just had to go where Hill went because Hill beat his man because Hill's so fast. So now that leaves one-on-one coverage for anybody on the other side, whether it be Robinson, Pringle, Watkins, Hardman, or Kelsey. I mean, Hill didn't have a big game last night, but his impact on the game just because of his speed changes everything. And we saw it last year when Hill was hurt. The Chiefs' offense still was very good without him, but he brings a different dimension just by the fact he's on the field. And so what do you do as a defensive coordinator? I have no idea what you do when the Chiefs are healthy. And then they can run the ball on top of that? Good luck.
Yeah.
Because Mahomes is not going to make three boneheaded plays in a game. He just doesn't. And he's only going to get better. You try to throw different coverages at him, he'll eventually figure that out, and he did last night. You play man-to-man, you're going to get beat. Unless you can rush the passer and get pressure on Mahomes with four-man rush, you're going to get beat man-to-man. If you play zone, you're going to get just – you got to hope there's a holding penalty, basically. Or you got to hope guys drop passes or Mahomes is a little inaccurate. Because you run zone, then you got Kelsey's going to eat you alive.
Uh-huh.
And then – let's say you bracket or you double Kelsey and you got Hill covered and Watkins and you got Hardman and then, oh, crap. We got to look at, here's Hilaire coming out of backfield. Who's got that guy? He just slowly goes out of the backfield. Looks like he's going to initially block and then he just sets up for a screen or a swing pass or he's a safety valve. You know, Alex Smith wore out that safety valve. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, dump it off to the running back. And Mahomes will when he needs to. But the Chiefs can beat you the ways of 1,000 paper cuts. There's just so many ways they can beat you. I don't know what you do defensively. To me, in order to beat the Chiefs, you have to have a phenomenal defensive line. You have to have a phenomenal four defensive linemen or three, and you've got to get penetration. You got to whip the Chiefs on the offensive line. You've got to get in the backfield. And, you know, let's be honest, a lot of passes Mahomes throws are quick releases too. So you don't have a lot of time to get to the quarterback. I do not know what you do. I mean, the Chiefs offensively didn't even play super great last night. It was solid, really good. They can play better. There's no question about it. And they kind of took the foot off the gas because they had the big lead. What do you do as a defensive coordinator? Because last night, you put six in the box, Hilaire is going to run for 8-9 yards a carry. That's what happened last night.
Yeah.
And the Texans have a pretty good defense and a pretty good front line, including J.J. Watt. And okay, so now you put seven in the box to slow down the running game. Well, now you've got all kinds of problems. I mean, who in the world do you take away out of this offense? What's your game plan?
There's not enough guys to cover what the Chiefs have. That's a literal fact on the field. Like you said, unless you want to try to go one-on-one with everybody, you don't have enough guys. So that's what you're talking about, and that's what Patrick Mahomes was talking about. You know, and Andy Reid both, they said they usually man us, and now they zone us. Well, they zone us to take out the deep ball to Tyreek Hill. They zone to take out 10, is what Mahomes said. And it's like, so you don't want to let Tyreek Hill beat you. And a lot of teams do that. You know,
right.
they'll be like, we need to focus on this speedster that's going to get the big plays for him and then try to slow everybody else down. Well, that doesn't account for – I mean, you can try to double Kelsey, like you said, too. Well, now you're taking four guys and putting them on two, and the numbers don't add up.
Right.
Okay, so that leaves Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson, Byron Pringle. That leaves, like you said, Clyde Edwards-Helaire out of the backfield. It's all these guys that are skilled very highly skilled. You know, I add Byron Pringle to that because he's been in the mix with this offense. He knows what to do in this offense. And so it's there's just not – the numbers aren't there. And I would hate to be a defensive coordinator trying to scheme and plan for the Chiefs when you think that, okay, well, I've been beaten by playing man. Now let's do some cover two. Let's zone. And then you just – you get beat in that one. You just give up 17 points in the second quarter. And now you're sitting here like, what do I do? And, yeah, they say defenses adjust, and they will. You know, the really good defenses that can handle maybe some of that have depth in their secondary and you know, veteran leadership maybe in their secondary. Like, but it's just – I don't know how you do it. There's no one way to come out here and say this is how you're going to hold down the Chiefs' offense because there's just too many weapons and there's too many minds that are working to – even make it better after you wouldn't even think that could happen with what they've been doing in the past.
And what were teams trying to do when Mahomes was MVP and the defense was horrible? It was control the clock, limit possessions, and that still didn't work very often. Now the Chiefs can run the ball. That takes pressure on Mahomes. Mahomes threw for, what, 211 last night?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not unbelievably awesome, but he didn't have to do anything special. 24, 32, three touchdowns. That's the number I care about, touchdown passes. I ain't worried about yardage. I can already see Chiefs fans already starting to whine here, getting used to winning like this. Yeah, but it was fun when Mahomes threw for 400 yards. Yeah, and we were winning shootouts or losing shootouts. Yeah. I would rather win 30.
It was not fun to lose 54 to 51 to the Rams. As fun as that game was or the to Seahawks. Watch as a Chiefs fan, it was not fun to have a game like that.
I would rather win like we did last night. The Chiefs had a plus 10-minute time of possession last night. At one point, it was 22 to 10 minutes, and the Texans looked beat defensively, worn out. And the Chiefs finish with the 35 minutes of time of possession at 25 for the Texans, which means Deshaun Watson's not on the field as much. So that's already. You're already having a hard time beating the Chiefs. Now they're able to run the ball and control the clock. Oh, man, good luck with that. Here's another thing that's really scary about the Chiefs last night. Travis Kelce, 6 catches, 50 yards, and a touchdown. I mean, that's an average game for Travis Kelce. Tyreek Hill, 5 catches, 46 yards, a touchdown. That's an average game for Tyreek Hill. Sammy Watkins, 7 catches, 82 yards, a touchdown. That can be kind of a normal game when Watkins is healthy. Here's what I want to point out. Last night, the Chiefs scored 34 points and didn't even really try to score in the last quarter. 34 points for the Chiefs. Mecole Hardman had 1 catch for 6 yards, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't have a single catch last night. Wait till they get involved in the passing game. Whew!
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And here's the other thing about the Chiefs and makes them so hard to beat. Is that they don't have Bob Sutton as their coordinator anymore. They've got a guy that mixes up stuff, and now they got rookies making plays. L'Jarius Sneed started last night at corner, the rookie. You know what? They went after him early on, but he made adjustments. He's got height, and he's got speed, and you cannot teach speed. And he made a pick last night in his first game as a rookie. He looked okay. He didn't look overmatched. You know, Breland, they'll get after 4 games. They'll be deeper at corner. Fenton did fine. Ward, you know, hurt his hand late in the game, but, you know, he's a good corner. I mean, and then Frank Clark, he looked really good, I thought, last night, healthy. He looked like he did the last 6 games of last year. Chris Jones got a sack and a half and got some pressure up the middle. I mean, now, if you can't slow down this Chiefs offense, and now the defense plays, and we've said it all along, the Chiefs were just a top 20 defense, they'd win a Super Bowl. Well, that's what they did last year. In fact, they were a top 10 defense the last 6 weeks of the season through the playoffs. And really, they picked up where they left off. They gave up the 1 drive early. And after that, the Texans didn't do anything until it was really garbage time when the Chiefs up 31-7. The Texans last 7.5 minutes got 140 yards on 2 irrelevant drives, which I know Matthew's upset about. But the Chiefs defense, I thought, looked pretty good. Early on, they didn't look great against the run. They're still vulnerable against the run at times. Don't get me wrong. They're not a perfect defense. But if this defense is top 15 or top 10, the only way the Chiefs are going to lose this year is have a really bad day and they beat themselves. I'm telling you, this Chiefs team, offensively, with the weapons they have, the only way they're going to lose games this year is a lack of focus. They beat themselves with penalties or they have injuries. That's the only way this offense can be held in check is if somebody gets hurt or the Chiefs have a whole bunch of, they drop the ball, they fumble the ball, return for a touchdown. I mean, that's the only way the Chiefs are, or the defense just has one of those days like they used to where they can't stop anything. That's the only way you're going to beat the Chiefs. And trust me, the Chiefs are going to lose, I would think, a couple games this year.
Yeah.
And if you have injuries, you know, Mahomes gets hurt, all bets are off. Although the Chiefs still will probably be just fine with Chad Henne and be still really good. And defense is better, and they'll probably pick it up another level if they have to do that like they did last year. Special teams, I thought, was solid last night. Townsend at punter, the rookie punter, did a nice job. He's a new holder. No problems there. They didn't even have a chance to work on the kick return game. Punt return game. There was fair catches. But we know Hardman's a Pro Bowler at that, so there's no weakness there. And honestly, last year, they had some problems covering kicks. They covered kicks really well last night.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me. I mean, that was a pretty complete performance. I'm not saying that they were lights out perfect last night, but considering there was no preseason games, it was the first game of the year, and they've got a rookie like Snead on defense at corner, and we didn't even see Gay at linebacker, who I think is going to end up being a contributor at some point. And then you had Dana in there, the rookie of defensive line. He made it play. You got some youth now in that defense. You'll get Breland back in 4 weeks, deeper on this in the secondary, and then you got a rookie at Edwards-Helaire. And Osimile looks like a big addition on the offensive line. They kind of maybe lucked into. What's not the like last night? Chiefs didn't turn the ball over. Listen, I think in order for teams to beat the Chiefs have to – you have to be plus two to beat the Chiefs. That means you got to force two turnovers a game and not turn one over. I think you got to be plus two or plus one, and you got to get a special teams touchdown somewhere. Or, you know, a Damien Williams fumble return for a touchdown like the Titans did last year.
Yeah.
I just don't see how you beat the Chiefs without waiting for them to beat themselves. I understand you take away Hill so he don't beat you on an 80-yard touchdown. Instead, they go on a 16-play, 91-yard drive. I mean, they've shown they can beat you quick. They can beat you methodically. I mean, what pick your poison? I guess you pick your poison and say, we'll let them nickel and dime us all the way down the field, hope they get a penalty, hope they fumble, hope there's a tip ball and get an interception instead of giving up the quick 80-yard score on a deep pass to Tyreek Hill. That makes sense.
Yeah,
but it's a way of losing by 1,000 paper cuts against this team.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and the Texans are one of the better teams in AFC. Let's not act like they're a really bad team. They're not.
And you know, I think people probably are going to try their best to take maybe a page out of the 49ers playbook from the Super Bowl last year. You know,
and they
you
had guys that could rush, and they had zone. They got defensive line pressure.
And that's probably what the Texans were thinking last night.
And they really didn't get it.
We're kind of similar to that team. What we kind of want to try to do here.
Yeah,
but they didn't have the pressure on Mahomes like maybe the 49ers did at times early in that game. And they didn't get to him to rattle him even a little bit. And if you can't do that when you're going to zone, he's going to eat you alive.
Exactly. You have to get pressure.
Listen, he doesn't care if he's got to throw short passes. He doesn't care if this team has to run the football.
Yep.
He wants to win, and the whole team wants to win. And offensively, you can have that mindset to try to, but you've got to execute as well as the 49ers did for 3.5 quarters last year to even have a chance.
Yes.
And if you don't, then you see last night, like watching with my buddy, I turned to him, like, this is like, I mean, they're playing all right, you know, but they're just doing what they can. I was like, I'm not like overly impressed with this game. Like the Chiefs are just blowing everything up and just doing everything perfect, but it was methodical, and you got to the point where it was just like, oh, they're up 31-7, and
it was dominant in every phase.
This isn't really even the best the Chiefs can play.
I know, exactly. Well, I think we've been spoiled by all the razzle dazzle and these great sexy plays last night. I don't know if there was a sexy play last night. I mean, Helaire's run, maybe
that run was about it. Yeah,
I mean,
if the touchdown would have counted on the first drive, that was probably the best big play.
Yeah, right. And that was erased because it was overturned. But on that drive then, of course, they got a sack.
Yeah.
The Texans got pressure on Mahomes. They got a sack, put him in a 3rd and 18, and then they punted. Now, see, there's the key. You've got to get a sack on the Chiefs. You've got to be able to get pressure without blitzing. You have to. And we saw last year when the Chiefs were in 3rd and 15 and longer, they were unbelievable in 3rd and 15 situations. So even when you get a sack or a holding penalty, it's not like, usually you'd say, okay, we got a 95% chance of stopping them and they're going to punt. No, with the Chiefs, it's probably about 50-50 on 3rd and 15 because of the weapons they have and because of the coach. And by the way, I like Andy Reid, 4th and 1 at his own 35, you go for it.
Yeah.
And he did, and he got it. And you know what? I agree with Chris Collinsworth, and he's not the first one to say this. I know. we've been saying on this show for a while, but people said it well before we even said it, is that why coaches always get scared on fourth and inches, even if it's on their side of the field. The percentage play is go for it. You're going to get it more often than not. Will you fail once in a while? Yeah, you might, but you got four downs. I don't know why coaches don't utilize four downs more often. I think coaches are starting to do that. And if you have a great offense with the best quarterback in the world, why would you not go for it? You know, at your own 12, okay, that's a little, might be a little crazy, but at your own 35, if you trust your defense, which the defense is better anyway, you can trust your defense to hold them to a field goal. It's a 3-point gamble, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's fourth and inches, fourth and a yard. And now on top of that, if you got offensive line and you can run behind Osimile at left guard, you know, big guy, that great run blocker. Why would you? Now, I don't think I see a quarterback sneaking around Holmes anytime soon, by the way. But I mean, that's why the Texans, I think teams are going to have to do what the Baltimore Ravens did the first time in Kansas City last year. You go for it every time on fourth down. Fourth and five, you know, Harbaugh started doing that in that game, remember, and it worked. And then he got a little timid when it was on his own 40 on fourth and five. And what happened? They punted, Chiefs went and scored. It's like, what's the point? Like Chris Hollick-Collinsworth said last night, whether the Chiefs go 50 or 90 yards, they can score from wherever. So what's the big difference? Well, field position. Well, against this Chiefs offense, it doesn't matter. So if you got the ball fourth and four, fourth and five at your own 45, you should go for it.
Yeah.
I agree. You're only gaining 30, 40 yards of field position. That's one pass the hill.
Yeah, if you're the opposing team. If you're the Chiefs, you know, I think now, like you said, I think if it's a Bob Sutton scheme on the other side, that's when Andy starts to think more about it.
Yeah, like, because you're protecting
the
defense.
Should I do this or not? Because this defense is not good.
And to me, it doesn't matter then, because it didn't matter where the opposing team got the ball. That defense was giving it up anyway.
Yeah.
So in my opinion then, it was your best defense was to keep your offense on the field and go for it.
Yeah, and I agree with that. But I think it makes it easier now for Andy
Reid
as an offensive guy to go ahead and say, okay,
trust
let's
your defense
do it. I
more.
Trust these guys. These guys won a Super Bowl for me.
Yep.
You know, they made big plays all throughout the playoffs last year. I trust these guys.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get this fourth and inches here, and when I go for it, okay, they'll hold them to no more than three.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that. That's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an easier decision to make, I think, as an offensive coach, when you can trust that you've got the right guy as a coordinator on the other side and the right personnel to be able to, okay, we can do this. Even if it doesn't work out, we're going to be all right.
Remember that game last year with the Chiefs? They had like 25 seconds left, and it was their own 20, and they ran a play, and then Mahomes got hit, fumbled, and it was a touchdown. It was against the Texans. Remember that game last year? The Chiefs lost. Game kind of, it was like, and all these people, you know, hindsight, you know, coaches after the fact, you know, sitting on their Barca loungers drinking a beer going, well, we should never just take a knee. Why did we even try to do something like that? Last night, the Chiefs had the ball with 25 seconds to go. First and 10, thrown 41. 17-yard pass to Watkins. 26-yard pass to Kelsey. And they got a chip shot field goal, and they almost scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
With 25 seconds to go, and they had their timeouts remaining at their own 41, the Chiefs didn't take a knee. They were aggressive, up 14-7. They knew they were going to get the ball to start the second half, so some teams would have taken a knee and been conservative. And Andy Reid might have done that with different teams he's had, but not with Patrick Mahomes. And he trusts his quarterback. And the Chiefs, not only did they got a field goal, but they almost got a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that was with 25 seconds on the clock. So I don't want to ever hear anybody, a Chiefs fan, ever again say, we need to take a knee and not take a chance here. Unless it's inside our own 10, I'm not going to agree with you. And even if you throw a pick, so be it. 9 times out of 10, it's going to end up being good for you if you let your offense go. And Andy Reid, give him credit last night. He let him go 4th and 1, his own 35, went for it, got it on the Sherman run. And then 25 seconds to go before half, you knew you were getting the ball back. He could have been conservative, like, dude, we don't want to have a turnover here and go be tied like last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Andy could have easily done that and been conservative and got timid at his own 41. And he might have done that at his own 21 last night. I don't know. But that probably went through his head. Well, you know, last year at Texans, we kind of tried to do something, and that backfired. Nope. We're 2 pass plays, 1 incomplete, then boom, 17 yards. The next one to Kelsey, that was for 11 yards. And then there was a horse collar penalty on top of that. And then the next thing you know, the Chiefs are upset because they didn't score a touchdown. 25 seconds to go at their own 41, and they were upset they had to settle for 3. And every other NFL team would be like, give me 3 or I'll take a knee and settle for a 7-point lead at the half with me getting the ball in the third quarter. that's what makes this team different.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's evolution of where we're at with this Chiefs team.
Yes.
That Andy Reid trusts those guys to do that. You
Absolutely.
Know? He's evolved, I think, because of the success that they've now had.
Do you think it's easier for him to make some of these decisions now because he's no longer got that monkey on
100%.
His back? I think so, too.
I think things will look a lot different at times this year with regard to that with Andy Reid, with some of his conservatism and some of the things he doesn't like to do normally.
Right.
And that helps when he got Mahomes, too, like we talk about. And I think it's just the whole thing packaged together that, you know, as far as my career goes right now, I'm kind of playing with house money.
I'm
pretty well set. You know, I made all these championship games and won all these games. I'm in the top five of winning, of wins as a coach, before, all that comes down to it. And all right, let's do it. Let's have some fun finally.
Only criticism of Andy Reid last night I have is the welder shield. That's either got to be cleaned up or fixed or get rid of.
Somebody said maybe he's fogging it over because he covers his mouth with his play sheet. So maybe he's intentionally fogging it so they can't read his lips when he's calling
plays. Did you see the meme on social media on Twitter? Here's Andy Reid watching the game tonight, and it was just blurry.
Yeah.
And he still was calling plays that were scoring touchdowns. Yeah. That was pretty funny. Chiefs defense with 4 sacks last night. They limited Texans to 7 points until, it was over. With 7 minutes to go. Patrick Mahomes has tossed 3 or more touchdowns 19 times in his career, and that's in 37 games. So in other words, 51% of the time, you can chalk Mahomes up for 3 touchdowns or more every single game. So there you go, fantasy football people. There was a demonstration of unity before the game. Listen, there's a little bit of a controversy about that from the standpoint about the fans. There was about 17,000 fans that were there at the game. The Texans stayed in the locker room during the anthem and during the song before that. The Chiefs, they stood up. Most of them, there's, I think, one player that took a knee, which is fine. To me, that's up to them. Once again, you can say it's not, you can say it's not fine, whatever. Well, some people say it's not fine for you to worry about a guy taking a knee either. So to each their own. I'm not going to get in that discussion. But the argument or the thing out there is that there were boos when the players were in a line at midfield all the way down the field, locked in arms, both the Texans and the Chiefs, Mahomes and Watson were center stage there along with Andy Reid. And on TV, I heard boos like in the first few seconds, but then it pretty much disappeared. So I didn't think it was a major deal. Keep in mind that Chiefs fans will be like, Chiefs, or they can be booing Texan players because there were still some Texan players running onto the field. Yeah. And there is some video now on social media that people are at the game when you go and you listen to the audio. And there's some people nationally that have obviously, like they normally do, they've taken something and they've blown it out of proportion.
People locally that did that last
yeah,
night,
yeah, locally
too.
They did. Yeah, locally they're like, I thought we were better than this Kansas City. Listen, all it takes is a couple people.
You?
Just because a couple people boo and you hear a couple boos, that doesn't represent everybody else in Kansas City. That's the problem. We sometimes let minority rule this country. Just a quick sidebar there. So the video that you see on social media is really, you maybe hear real quickly a little booze, just like I heard on TV. And it depends on where the TV mic is, by the way, on how that picks that up. So that can be misconstrued or kind of out of context a little bit. But when you got people there at the game, you didn't hear this overwhelming booing at all. Yeah. So it seems to be
the way I was. I heard a lot of cheese.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's a moment of silence.
I mean, did somebody boo? Yeah, there were a few people booed. But
I mean, that's going to happen
no matter what.
Yeah. Everybody that was asked about it, like Bill O'Brien's like, well, we were just coming out onto the field. It might have been that.
Right.
And then, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Tyrann Mathieu, they're all like, I don't really even notice it, you know?
Yeah, I didn't think it was that noticeable, but TV, it picked it up, and I think it got blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
All right, Andy Reid on CEH and that offensive mix last night. Well, the Chiefs really did a nice job of mixing the run with the pass.
He's had a good camp, and he's a heck of a player, so, we wanted to give him the ball, but we didn't come in saying he's going to get X number, but we like the mix that we were able to get going with, and we threw the ball well and caught the ball well and then also ran it well. So, you give the offensive line credit for that against what I consider one of the best defensive fronts in the league.
So the Chiefs will be off until week 2. They'll be at L.A. to take on the Chargers in that brand-new state-of-the-art stadium a week from this Sunday, week 2 for the Chiefs. You can hear it on your home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, our sister station, Z96.3 The Lake. lost in what took place last night in the sports world. If you're a Royals fan, you understood what happened, but the Chiefs usually drown out the Royals. Obviously, they will when you're the defending Super Bowl champions and you're the only game on TV to kick off the NFL season. And so maybe it's good that Brady Singer didn't toss a no-hitter last night because it wouldn't have got its due. But it still should get some due because Brady Singer, a rookie right-hander, 24-year-old rookie for the Royals, and just his ninth big league start, last night had a no-hitter going with two outs in the eighth inning in Cleveland.
And now Austin Hedges. And Hedges hits a ground ball into right field, and Merrifield thought about throwing to first. So Austin Hedges, whose career batting average is under 200 in over 400 major league games, is the first Indians hitter to get a base hit, and it comes with two outs in the bottom of the eighth.
The 24-year-old Singer, what a performance last night. Royals win 11-1. He goes eight innings, 119 pitches, one hit, two walks, eight Ks, 7 2/3 of hitless ball. And that hit by Indians catcher Austin Hedges on a 3-2 fastball. The Royals have not had a no-hitter since August 26, 1991, when Brett Saberhagen no-hit the Chicago White Sox in Kansas City. That's the only, I think that's the only no-hitter the Royals have. Did Busby throw one? I'd have to double-check that. Steve Busby I'm referring to. The Royals offense gave Singer all the support he would need. They hit three home runs, one each by Edward Olivares. Nice pickup so far. Mikel Franco and Alberto Mondesi. Mondesi hit another homer. Franco had three hits and five RBIs. Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, talking about his rookie's performance last night on the hill.
He had the stuff to do it today, and we sensed it pretty early that this was a pretty special outing. Just a lot of things that we talked about, how he was commanding both sides of the bottom of the zone so well, and just seeing that the slider was tunneled so evenly with the heater that they're having trouble picking it up. And you know, this is a team that has seen him before, and I just thought that it was going to be a special night. I was right. It was a special night.
It was a special night. Singer, he's the future, along with a lot of other young pitchers. We're going to see another young pitcher for the Royals, Chris Bubich, the left-hander, 0-5 on the year, 4.89 ERA. He's on the hill against the Pirates. Pittsburgh comes to town at the K tonight at 7:05. Royals now 17-28. They have won three in a row. And then get ready for tomorrow. Rookie right-hander, 23-year-old Carlos Hernandez is going to make his first big league start tomorrow against the Pirates. You think about this rotation. You got Bubich, you have Singer, and now Hernandez is going to make his debut. And you got Brad Keller, who's only 25. And Danny Duffy still has some left in the tank, and he's under contract. Suddenly, if these young guys start pitching like Brady Singer did last night, you've got one pretty solid rotation. And that's not even counting Coar, Daniel Lynch, and Asa Lacy, guys that are high on and high draft picks that are still in the minors, but technically they're the alternative site right now at the T-Bone Stadium. The future is bright for the Royals. Royals fans, don't get all down about this season. Understand, these are the points you got to look at. You got to see Mondesi starting to rake and steal bases. You start to see Dozier hitting home runs. You start to see, get Salvi back. That'd be helpful. Get Soler back from his injury. But then you start seeing, improvement with Nicky Lopez. You start seeing improvement with these starting pitchers, these young guys, and the future is very bright for the Royals. All right, college football. There was a game last night. Miami of Florida beat UAB 31-14. Here's the schedule for tomorrow, 11 a.m. Iowa State against Louisiana Lafayette. West Virginia against Eastern Kentucky. North Carolina will take on Syracuse, 11 a.m. Arkansas State at K-State, 11 a.m. More on that in a moment. Also, Notre Dame will host Duke tomorrow. And also, Missouri State's at Oklahoma at 6 tomorrow evening. And Coastal Carolina will be at KU tomorrow, pregame at 8:30, kickoff at 9 on your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas, our sister station, Z96.3, The Lake. Big 12, the focus is on their conference. I mean, you look at this college schedule. There's no SEC games, no Big Ten games, no Pac-12 games, a few ACC games, and it's the Big 12. Granted, three of the Big 12 games, non-con games, were postponed due to COVID-19. KU, we'll start with them. The Jayhawks 3-9 a year ago, 1-8 in the Big 12. Their only win over Texas Tech. They'll take on Coastal Carolina, a team that defeated them in the second game of the season a year ago, 12-7. How long has it been? When I had Haney on yesterday, the voice of Jayhawks, I thought that game was 2 years ago. That's how long the last 6 months have been. But it was Les Miles' first year as head coach last year in his second game as head coach. Coastal Carolina came into Lawrence down 7-0 and then beat them physically at the line of scrimmage and won 12-7. But then 6 days later, KU scored 48 at Boston College, and nobody saw that coming. Coastal Carolina, KU, they are looking for a little payback, less miles on the adjustments they got to make this year for Coastal Carolina.
Rather than give the game plan away, I think there's certain adjustments that have been made, certainly in all three phases, offense, defense, and special teams, that have allowed us to, you know, step in and fight and feel like that they, as a team, know what to expect and how to operate.
Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, was on with us yesterday for that full interview as he previewed Coastal Carolina KU. Go to our podcast page. Go to katiecoach94.com, click on the podcast link, and then click on the sports ticket and find that interview with Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, as he previews the Coastal Carolina game. KU, Coastal Carolina, tomorrow evening, 8:30 pregame, 9 o'clock in the evening, at night, on Z96.3 Lake. K-State will probably be in bed, everybody, by 9 o'clock. They'll have their game at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning against Arkansas State. That's on Fox TV. K-State coming off an 8-5 campaign, 5-4 in the Big 12. Lost in Liberty Bowl to Navy to wrap up the season. Pretty good year in year one for Chris Klieman, the head coach of K-State, begins year number two. His thoughts on Arkansas State, who's already played a game this year.
It's a really good Arkansas State team that we as a coaching staff have a ton of respect for. They've had, like, 9 straight winning seasons, 9 straight bowl games, and I know Blake does a tremendous job with their program and be a great opponent coming here for us to challenge us in game one.
Arkansas State lost their opener. They're 0-1. K-State hosts Arkansas State. Any quick thoughts on K-State game, Dusty, tomorrow?
It's just kind of like I said about the Chiefs yesterday on the show. Just kind of want to see where we're at here without having the same preparation as normal, and I feel like it might be behind the eight ball a little bit with Arkansas State actually having a game already. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of interested to see that dynamic of it as well. So I'm excited to see K-State get back out on the field and see what they can bring to the table this year under second year.
I'm just excited for, you know, now I'm in football mode, baby. Yeah. I mean, Chiefs last night, now I'm ready for college football tomorrow. Last Saturday was weird. This was different stuff to be watching that wasn't normal. Yeah. Like, this is not right in September to not have college football.
I got up in the morning. I'm like, I'm supposed to be on my way to K-State Buffalo right now. And it's just like, man. But this weekend will be different because they're actually playing.
If you think it's weird for us, imagine how weird it is for Nebraska fans, USC fans, Ohio State, Michigan fans, Iowa fans. I mean, I do feel for those fan bases. I truly do, because they're – the Big Ten has got a mess on their hands. I mean, Ryan Day now, the head coach of Ohio State, James Franklin of Penn State have come out with public comments about how there hasn't been much communication from the Big Ten office and not really a clear communication on all the details as to why they canceled the fall football season. They're still talking. Yeah. The players and the teams are planning on saying, hey, we're preparing as if we're going to play in October or November, which that's what they got to do. But I mean, if you get to the middle of October, or let's just say we get through the end of September and all these games, you know, for the most part get played, the SEC has a good first week, the ACC, September 26th, you know, we'll start conference play, both of them, for the most part, conference play, and then, you know, the Big 12 will have their Big 12 opening weekend out and taken care of. I mean, if we're early October and there haven't been, like, tons of postponements and cancellations for the schedules and nothing's come to a halt, the Big 10 has an even bigger black eye. And this is there's lawsuits now against the Big Ten because of all the money that these universities are going to lose because of the Big Ten's decision to not play. So stay tuned on that soap opera.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine what it's like for, you know, Nebraska fans right now. There's nothing to look forward to on the weekend. You know, you're watching football going, why can K-State play, but we can't play?
Yeah, that's more of it for me, too. It's just like I'm mad that these other teams are doing it and getting games in. Yeah. And our conference was just, boom, we're done. And basically it was like, oh, everybody's going to follow us. No, they're not. Sure didn't happen, did it?
And along the high school lines, there are schools in Kansas City where they're not playing football, and yet there are teams 3 miles away from them playing football games. And they're sitting there going, why can they play 3 miles away, but we can't? It is hard to explain, isn't it?
Yes.
NBA playoffs, the Lakers go up 3-1 on the Rockets. Before the series began, I had the Lakers winning in 5. Rockets won game 1, and then the Lakers won the last 3. They have a chance to finish it in 5 games. Anthony Davis, 29 points, 12 rebounds. James Harden last night, 21 points, 2-11 from the floor. He had a whole bunch of free throws. Last night, James Harden is the top offensive player in the NBA, right? Averages 37 a game. Do you know what James Harden did last night in the fourth quarter when his team's season's kind of on the line? You're down 2-1. That's a must-win for the most part. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go down 3-1. Only 12 teams in NBA history come back from a 3-1 deficit to win a series. Do you know what the Beard's numbers were offensively in the fourth quarter last night?
I'm guessing they were not good.
He didn't take a single shot.
Yeah.
How do you go from averaging 37 points a game to not attempting a single shot in the fourth quarter when your team's season really is on the brink? That is not a superstar, in my opinion.
I
have never bought in on James Harden being a superstar. I think he is one of the best offensive players out there.
No question.
He travels half the time. I've said that before.
Absolutely.
He's upped his defense in the playoffs. I give him credit for that because I think he's been lackadaisical at times on defense. But he's a guy that dribbles the ball a ton. They don't move when they don't move the ball and they just watch Harden dribble, 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 and then pull back, step back three, you don't get anybody else involved. You live and die by the three. And last night, he was 2 of 11. He took only 11 shots and didn't take a shot in the fourth quarter. You're not going anywhere. If he's your best player, you are not winning championships with that guy. I don't care who you are. Yeah. I don't care what coach you are. If your star player goes 2 of 11 and doesn't take a shot in the fourth quarter when the game's still up in the air, it wasn't like the Lakers were up 30, okay? He's getting a ton of heat, James Harden. And quite honestly, if you want to be considered a star, that's fair criticism. I mean, it's one thing if he goes out there in the fourth quarter and goes 1 of 12. At least he's trying. I'm not saying ball hog it and just shoot it every time you get it. But how can you explain not taking a shot in the fourth quarter of Game 4 of the NBA Western Semifinals against the Lakers? How can you explain that? Does that mean you gave up on yourself? Does that mean you gave up on your team? I mean, that's not a good mentality to have if you're supposedly one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah, and Liz, I'm not going to pretend I've seen all of James Harden's playoff games, but I saw this same James Harden in Game 6 when my favorite team, the Spurs, beat them in the playoffs in 2017. And
disappeared.
I mean, it was over.
It looked like he didn't even try. Yeah. I remember we talked about
offense
on the show.
It looked like
he had thrown the game.
Yeah.
We had talked about it. It looked like he did not care. And it was like, from the beginning, it just looked like he had checked out, almost like he had put money on the Spurs to win.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know, man. Like, people that are, you just don't do that.
You start to wonder.
Those things don't happen with people that, like you said, are legit superstars, are legit guys that want to win championships.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying that James Harden doesn't want to win a championship
right.
when I say that.
Sure.
But it's like, dude, those are just the things you don't see from guys like that typically.
Now, in fairness to James Harden, maybe, perhaps, he has some mental health issues we don't know about.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he does, but he might. What happens if next week we find out he's been battling depression or whatever? We didn't know about Paul George, and he was playing really badly and caught all kinds of criticism. He came out and said, I was in a dark place. What if that's what's happening with James Harden? I mean, I just got caught up in it. I said he deserves a criticism if he wants to be a superstar and carry his team. He ain't going to win no championships with James Harden on your team if this is the way he's going to play in crunch time. I stand by that comment. But also, having said that, consider that maybe there's something happening in his world, or maybe something happened in his life yesterday that nobody knows about, and maybe that's why he was kind of despondent. I'm not saying there was,
yeah.
But sometimes we're so quick to criticize. NBA playoffs continue tonight. Nuggets and Clippers, Game 5. Clippers can close that out on TNT at 5:30. And tonight, Game 7. Oh, that should be a good one. 8 o'clock, Celtics and Raptors. Winner moves on to the Eastern Conference Finals. So who you got, Celtics or Raptors tonight?
I'm going to go with Boston.
You can go with Boston?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with Toronto. I think they've expended a lot of energy to win, but the Raptors have been in this situation before, and they got some guys that have been there. The Celtics still a little bit young. I think the Celtics are maybe the better team, but the Raptors, I just think they might find a way to a dogfight and get through. I think when you got Bulldogs like Lowry and Van Fleet, although I still think the Celtics are the best player, but Tatum hasn't been playing as well lately. They've started to figure some things out against him. I'll go with the Raptors. I don't feel confident about it, but I'll go with the Raptors. I'll just be different.
Yeah.
How's that? NHL playoffs, Stars over the Golden Knights 3-2. Dallas 2 wins away from the Stanley Cup Finals. They won in overtime last night. They lead the best of 7-2-1 over Vegas. The Lightning are up 2-0 on the Islanders. They'll play tonight on USA at 7 o'clock. USA, there's still a network called USA?
Yeah.
I did not know if it was still around or not.
Yeah.
U.S. Open shows that I don't watch USA, obviously. The final U.S. Open is set. Well, I had this feeling when I saw Serena lose set 2 last night that we wouldn't get what I wanted to see. because I wanted to see a rematch in the U.S. Open final from a few years ago when Serena stole Naomi Osaka's thunder with her big soap opera of the way she handled things in that thing. Naomi Osaka last night won in three sets over an American, Jennifer Brady. Is that right?
Yeah.
She part of the Brady family? Sounds like it.
Part of some Brady family, obviously.
Yeah, Florence Henderson was her grandma. So Jennifer Brady loses in three sets to Naomi Osaka. Brady was an American, and, of course, Serena Williams, an American player. And then Serena, all she had to do is be an Azarenka, unranked player, used to be one of the best players in the world. Serena won the first set easily, 6-1. All Serena had to do is get one more set, and we would have had Serena and Osaka part two at the U.S. Open for the second time in the finals in 3 years, and wouldn't that have been good theater? But guess what happened?
Vika said no,
and Serena didn't play as well, and Serena lost in three sets. She won 6-1 and lost 6-3, 6-3. And that's a fourth three-set match in a row where it seemed like her body took a toll, in which you get it. I mean, she's 39, for crying out loud. We got to understand she's 39, and I don't think she's going to have a lot more chances. I mean, she's going to be maybe in the quarters here and there and get to the semis, but these are chances she has to take advantage of. She's running out of time in regards to getting more major titles.
Yeah.
And the young ones are starting to come up, although Azarenka is more of a seasoned vet. But Osaka in the final, trying to win another U.S. Open. The men's semifinals... Thiem against Medvedev and Busta, who beat Djokovic because he, of course, had to default once he hit the linesman in the throat with a ball. Busta is against Zverev. Zverev was kind of my pick after Djokovic went out. Although Thiem, I'm cheering for Thiem because he always gets knocked out by one of the big three, Federer, Djokovic, or Nadal, and he always gets stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he lost in five sets last year, the year before, to Nadal at the U.S. Open. It was a great match, and I felt for him. Like, God, same guy's winning all the time. So I'm going to cheer for the Australian, because there's no Americans left on the men's side of the draw. So that's your update on the U.S. Open. Anything else to add sports-wise before I let everybody go? A busy Friday because of all the stuff going on, plus the Chiefs playing on a Thursday.
I'm doing my sportscast. I'm like NBA and NHL playoffs with all this mix of everything else that's going on. It is. We went from nothing to everything at once. And you know, it's...
I love it.
I don't hate it.
No.
At all.
I'm cool with that, man. I'm cool with that. All right, get everybody the schedule one more time before we sign off.
Yeah, we'll start Football Express tonight at 5:40, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable on KD Country 94. Then our games of the week on KD Country 94. It is Rock Hills at Lakeside, pregame 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock. And then on Z96 Point to the Lake, Osborne at St. John's Tipton. Same pregame, same kickoff time. And then on online video stream of the Beloit Trojan channel, Beloit at Southeast of Saline tonight. Pregame around 6:45, kickoff 7. They're on ncksports.com. Then we'll conclude our game night coverage with the local high school football scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne at 10:05 here tonight. Everything that's on our radio stations, you can always also catch online at katycountry94.com.
Fantastic. Today's 9/11. Never forget. Have a great weekend, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.